Worldwide. This is FSN.
Thanks very much, Ollie. Welcome to Thursday's programme. Hope you're well. It is the 6th of December 2018. My name is Richie Allen. Always good to be with you. You know that. Tweet me. It's at Richie Allen Show. Lots to talk about today.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Yeah. Boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. So let's do it, eh? Tweet the program right now.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Lord Monckton of Braunschweig, Christopher Monckton, old friend of ours, joins the program this hour. We'll talk Brexit betrayal. Don't panic. No Brexit in the monologue. We'll talk a little bit of Brexit betrayal, but also the immigration conference in Marrakesh next week. We'll also talk student snowflakes and more with Christopher Monckton. He joins the programme this hour. And I played you some audio yesterday from a fascinating man called Jerry Day. Jerry is an award-winning television producer. He has won Emmys for producing television. These days, as well as working in television, he warns people about the hazards of smart meters and EMF devices. Yes, he does. And joins us live from Los Angeles in the second hour of the programme. Jerry Day and Chris Monckton, the guests on Thursday's Richie Allen Show. Well, well, well. You well? Are you well? Now, first of all, a big shout out and a big thanks to Jen Crosby. Jen is based on the West Coast, on the Pacific Coast, and is a good friend of ours, a supporter and a long-time listener of the programme. Got in touch with me overnight, did our Jen, and she said, Richie, the mainstream media... Jen was listening yesterday, and I covered the story of Green Bay Packer legend Brett Favre, who seemed to be, or it was alleged that he was spoofed by a bunch of white supremacists who got him to say something anti-Semitic. Now, what he said wasn't anti-Semitic. He made a video, he was paid for it, where he talked about the USS Liberty. Right, I'm not going to get into all that again, because we all know about the USS Liberty and the cover-up and all of that. But the mainstream media were saying that the people who set Brett Favre up were basically a bunch of white supremacists. Jen Crosby has corrected me. Now, she's correcting the mainstream media. I read the stories from the mainstream media, chapter and verse, basically. I didn't know anything about this group. So Jen is right to say, the mainstream media is copying BuzzFeed's defamatory statements that the Goyim Defence League is a group of white supremacists and a hate group. They have identified two people as leaders. There are no leaders, Richie. Most all members make their own content. The GDL, the Goyim Defence League, is not an alt-right white supremacist hate group. They don't buy into the two-party fake system. They denounce it and don't have a side. GDL has whites, blacks, Muslims, Hispanics, so how can they be an alt-right white supremacist group, says Jen. Thanks for that, Jen. And I'm going to try and get one or two or three, well, one anyway, member, if there is such thing as a membership, of the GDL to come on the programme with me next week. Good evening to Patricia Braunschweiler. Not for any particular reason, Richie, but you said tweet the programme right now. Good stuff, Patricia. Somebody is listening. 6.5 minutes past the hour. Doesn't Fox News love the old Christmas nativity story? Well, apparently the Daily Mail loves one as well. In the Daily Mail today, there is a headline, and it goes as such. A fray in a manger. Do you like that? I love that pun. A fray in a manger. Furious traditional nativity display is banned by Grinch-like shopping centre bosses over fears it would upset non-Christian visitors. Now, this pisses off Christians. I'm not a Christian, but I understand why it pisses them off. And they have my sympathy here. A shopping centre in Stirling called The Thistles has basically banned a nativity scene this year. And church leaders in Stirling are not too happy at all. The shopping centre says they were politically and religiously neutral. What a load of bollocks that is. One of the great things about going around the city centres at Christmas time is to see the effort made by people to to practice, not to practice, but to keep tradition going, right? Anyway, the shopping centre bosses at the Thistles refused the traditional nativity display, saying that their customers did not want to be subjected to individual organisations' beliefs. Did they canvass their customers? I wonder. Did they do a survey of their customers? I wonder. I doubt it. Anyway, they refused to budge when an MP urged them to reconsider. Member of Parliament said, please consider, and they wouldn't budge. The Catholic Church in Scotland and the Church of Scotland said it was a pretty depressing day for all of us. I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. It's ridiculous. I know some of my listeners will go 2, 3, 4 steps more further than that, and they'll allege that there are a number of reasons for this. And again, some of that I have sympathy with as well. It's dreadful. No good. No good. And I mean, what annoys me is it doesn't appear that they've been pushed on this hard enough, this shopping centre. You say your customers don't want the nativity. Again, show us some evidence that you canvassed your customers and then we might believe you. Right, depressing story for some people, I suppose. Now, the Times of Israel, we don't often refer to the Times of Israel in the monologue, do we, dear listener? No, we don't. Here's a headline. You're going to love this. Europe is finished, leading lawyer says as he leaves UK for Israel. It's time to wander again, Mark Lewis tells fellow Jews facing rising anti-Semitism in Britain and across Europe. Europe, in my view, is finished, says Mark Lewis. It's finished. Europe is finished. Every day you see people being attacked in one way or another across Europe. He's talking about Jewish people, by the way. No, this is monumental bollocks. It's just not happening. There is no evidence to support this. But he's running from the UK because apparently it's a terrifying place for the Jews. Well, when I read down this story, dear listener, my heart sprang open with joy. My heart was lifted. Why? Because Mark Lewis is not going on his own. He is accompanied by none other than Mandy Blumenthal. Do you remember Mandy Blumenthal? Do you remember Mandy? Well, she's going with him. She's his partner, and she agrees with him that they have to leave. You see people murdered in museums in Belgium, people murdered in schools in France, people attacked in England. There's only one place for Jewish people to go, Lewis said, and Blumenthal. Yes, it would appear the only place to go is to squat in Palestine. Good man. Now, Mandy Blumenthal, is this the same Mandy Blumenthal, who has been writing in the Telegraph, in the Daily Mail, in the Guardian, for nearly 3 years, threatening to leave? Is it? Is it the same Mandy Blumenthal, the longest goodbye in history, who's been speaking to UK television news, Sky, Channel 4, as I said, writing articles for years now, saying she's going to leave? Is she finally leaving? Is she? Is Mandy Blumenthal finally out of the UK? Is she? She is, you know. Mandy Blumenthal is gone. Google Mandy Blumenthal, by the way, if you want to see who I'm talking about. Mandy Blumenthal. Mandy's left the nation. Mandy's at the station. I wrote an article about this fishwife on the Richie Allen website about 6 months ago. Threatening for years to go, she's finally gone. God help the Palestinians. They spoke at Ben Gurion Airport as they arrived with ridiculous Israeli Star of David flags in their hands. This is what they said. This is what they said. This is what they said. What's wrong with this today? Have we got them? No? Ah, I see what's happened there. I see what's happened there. Let's try that again. Here is Mandy Blumenthal and Mark Davis at the airport in At Ben Gurion Airport. Here we are. Here they are.
Look, what they say about Jews in England is something they wouldn't say about any other ethnic minority, any other gender or anything. It's fair game to attack Jews, to say that what we complain about is a smear, it's not proper, we're doing it for political motivation or whatever. It's not acceptable. It's time to leave.
Leaders in Europe
need
to actually understand that we will not go silently. We are not lambs to the slaughter. We're strong. We've got an amazing country here in Israel. And you know something? Their rhetoric will not be the final word for us.
And if you're talking about the Jewish leaders in Europe, then they need to start leading. Because at the moment, unfortunately, the problem is too much macharitis, that people are interested in themselves and being seen to be with a politician or anything. They need to lead by example. They need to get out.
They want every Jewish person in Europe to leave Europe and move to Israel. Dreadful. But they're gone. Mandy Blumenthal is gone. When she was pressed, Mandy Blumenthal, on national radio and television in the UK about proof that Jews are under threat in the UK, the only examples she had to offer were once where a taxi driver said something about the effing Jews. There was an incident where a young boy was chased in a supermarket in Manchester, allegedly because he was Jewish, and some Jewish person received a pizza from a pizza courier with a swastika on it. And because of that, they're gone. Mandy Blumenthal is gone. You know, incredibly, last year, only last year, the Jewish policy research, the Institute for Jewish Policy Research in this country conducted the largest and most detailed survey of attitudes towards Jews and Israel ever conducted in the UK. And the survey found that the levels of hostility here were among the lowest in the world. But Mandy and Mark happened to be entering the most racist, filthy, apartheid, genocidal state on planet Earth. Ironically, we're leaving the UK to get away from hatred, and you're walking right through the doors of the most hateful country on planet Earth. Don't forget, it's Israel that this year passed the Racist Nation State Bill, legislation that declares that Israel is the historic homeland of the Jews. It isn't. And that the right to exercise national self-determination is unique to Jewish people. Couldn't be any more racist. Mandy Blumenthal. So if it's racist you want, Mandy love, you'll find it in Israel as easy as turning on a tap. Interesting stories in The Guardian today. These might wind you up. One about the lack of black and ethnic minority chefs, black and Asian and minority ethnic chefs in UK restaurants. Big problem about this, apparently. Apparently it's a massive problem, but you didn't know about it. I didn't know about it. Of all the Michelin-starred restaurants in the UK, there are 165 Michelin-starred restaurants in the UK. Only 6% of them have head chefs that come from a black or a South Asian background. That's not good enough, so we're going to have to bring in diversity, is what we're going to have to do. So a number of different chefs were quoted in this article in The Guardian. It said it's not good enough. We have to have diversity. We have to break down these ethnic backgrounds. And the restaurants of the UK should reflect the population of the UK. So like it or not, you're going to have a chef in a restaurant near you that isn't there on his or her ability, but is there because of his or her ethnic background. Isn't that wonderful? Honest to God. Couldn't make this up. Positive discrimination. And there was another story in the same paper today about trying to diversify the police. How by 2030, they want the police force to be diverse enough to, again, to reflect the numbers. To reflect the population, basically. So it wants reflected in the police, the same percentage in the police as there is a percentage of black, Asian, minority, ethnic people in the UK. These are crazy times. 17 and a half minutes past the hour, crazy times. Here's a story that will resonate with some of our listeners. MSNBC affiliate News 3 in Las Vegas are reporting on a very bad reaction to the flu jab. Of course, the flu jab is being pushed on people harder and harder as we move into the winter now. Very interesting story here. Have a listen to this. This is again News 3 Las Vegas, MSNBC.
A Las Vegas man became partially paralyzed, loses his vision and his ability to walk just one day after receiving the flu shot.
And guess what? He's been hospitalized for the last 2 weeks. In fact, at one point, his family watched terrified, seeing him on a ventilator in the ICU. New at 6, his family blames the flu shot. Gabby Hart joins us live from the Southern Nevada Health District. Gabby, what can you tell us about this?
Well, Reed Marie, Shane Morgan went from completely healthy to unable to see, walk, or even breathe on his own. And tonight, he's sure that the flu shot triggered a rare disorder called GBS. And officials here at the health district are saying that there have been cases of GBS linked to the flu shot, but they say that it's extremely rare for this to happen.
He'd take the flu 10 to 1. You know
what
I mean?
I take the flu 3 times a season. I'd take it 3 times a season. I have to do this once in a lifetime.
At the start of November, Shane and Monique Morgan, like most couples, were planning for the holidays. With family and young infants coming to town, they decided to get the flu shot. And that's when things took a turn.
About 36 hours after he got the flu shot is when he started to get sick.
Days later, Shane complained that he couldn't feel his legs or arms, so his wife rushed him to Centennial Hills Hospital.
He spent about 4 days in the ICU on the ventilator.
His muscles weakened. Shane was unable to walk or breathe on his own. His speech and vision became distorted, and his left eye paralyzed shut.
The left eye doesn't really work at all because it won't open.
Doctors started treating Shane for Guillain-Barré syndrome, also known as GBS. It's a rare disorder where a person's immune system damages their nerve cells, in some cases, turning deadly. The Morgans say they're sure the flu shot triggered it.
I never dreamed that you could do any of this could ever happen.
According to the CDC, there is a link between the flu shot and GBS. However, it's extremely rare. Statistics show 1 to 2 people develop GBS from the flu shot per 1 million vaccinations. And officials with Southern Nevada Health District say the risk of developing GBS is actually higher if you catch the flu.
Yeah, that's a pile of shite, that last statement, that you've got a higher risk if you actually get the flu. Look, don't get the flu jab. You don't need it. The flu is not the worst thing in the world to get. It isn't. It's not the worst thing you can ever get, the flu. I've had heavy flus. I know people who've had heavy flus. I know old people who have had heavy flus. Just take loads of vitamin C, massive amount of liquids, get yourself into bed, and in 2 or 3 days you'll be okay. You don't need the flu jab, folks. Interesting story that. Right, we're going to move on. 21 minutes past the hour. Thursday's programme, the 8th of December, 2018. What are we? I'm not going to do that. It'll wind you up. If I keep doing the countdown to Christmas, it'll just wind you up. So I'm not going to do it. I'm going to leave it alone. I also said no Christmas carol-y type songs today. None of that. We'll do it tomorrow. We won't do it tomorrow. We'll do it Sunday. And we'll have Christmas music next week, I suppose. We won't be having anything from the William Shatner album. I've just been tweeted about William Shatner, Captain Kirk himself. Right, after the Beach Boys, we will be back, or I will be back even, and I will be joined by Christopher Monckton. Music from the Beach Boys on the Richie Allen Show. Always loved the David Lee Roth cover version of that, myself. That's just me, mind. It is exactly 23 and a half minutes past the hour. Let's get our first guest on so we can have more time with him. He will be with me right up till the top of the hour. He's been on the programme quite a few times in the past. You know all about him. Of course, he's a hereditary peer. He is a mathematical genius. That's certifiable. Mathematical genius, of course, as well. Political commentator, former political activist. He has done as much as anybody to challenge the false narrative on man-made climate change. We've often talked about that on the programme. And he's been on many times talking about the politics of the European Union and Brexit. So it's a great pleasure to welcome back to the programme the third Viscount Monckton of Brenchley, Christopher Monckton himself. Christopher, welcome back. How are you?
Well, Richard, it's good to hear you.
It's good to hear you. Thanks for coming on. And we're going to talk about this conference in Marrakesh, this United Nations organized conference, which isn't legally binding, but where countries will sign up to a consensus on migration. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. First and foremost, though, Brexit is it's gone. It's not even a pipe dream anymore. Christopher, it's not going to happen, is it?
Well, they're doing their best to stop it. And it's clear that this has been a long laid out plan by Theresa May, who is, of course, deeply establishment to her fingertips. She's a Remainer. And right from the start, I could see there was going to be trouble. There was that strange case, if you remember, which delayed the sending of the Article 50 letter of withdrawal to Europe by about 6 months.
Yeah.
And in that case, the government didn't put forward the obvious defence that any schoolboy lawyer would have known they should have put forward, which is that the sending of that letter was not, as both sides pretended it was in that case, an exercise of the royal prerogative, which is a discretion on the part of Theresa May. She had no discretion in the matter. Once we had voted to leave, she was obliged by Article 2 of the Lisbon Treaty to tell the EU. But that point was never argued at any of the stages in the government's case. I tried to get the court to pay attention to it, but I was too late. They said, no, you can't intervene. And now she's done the same thing again, and this time with another very important Brexit case, where some troublemakers from Scotland, MSPs and such, went via the Court of Session there, which is the High Court in Scotland, to the European so-called Court of So-Called Justice. And they said, we want the court to rule that even if the other member states don't agree that we can withdraw our withdrawal and stay in the EU, we should be allowed to do that unilaterally. And the court has issued a preliminary opinion on this. And of all the people, they gave it to a Spaniard to do this, a Spanish advocate general. And he went directly against the wording of the Lisbon Treaty and said that even though the Lisbon Treaty says that we can only leave provided we, or only withdraw and stay in, provided we have the unanimous agreement of all the other member states, that's what the treaty says. Nevertheless, we can still go ahead even if one or two of the other member states don't let us out. And again, the government didn't argue the obvious point, which is that you cannot interpret a treaty to mean something directly opposite to what it actually says. What it actually says is if we want to withdraw our letter of withdrawal and stay in the EU for longer than March the 29th next year, which is Freedom Day, if we want to withdraw, then we have to have the consent of all the member states to withdraw our withdrawal and stay in any longer. That's what the treaty says. But of course, the Spanish advocate general, given that the Spain and Britain are having a row again over Gibraltar, decides to find in a way which is deeply damaging to the interests of the vast majority who voted for Brexit 2 years ago. So this is a stitch up by the European and the British establishment. And I'm musing on the fact that because on two separate occasions, the British government, backed by the highest courts in Britain in the first instance and Europe in the second, have directly and flagrantly ignored what the law actually says for the sake of getting away with reversing Brexit, I don't see why we should continue to pay our taxes. And Scottish history points the way here. They had a thing called the Solemn League and Covenant, where people got together and said that they wouldn't cooperate with a government which was so far from complying with ordinary law. And I think we should do the same. We should all get together and say, right, we won't pay any more taxes unless and until the British government and the European dictatorship starts complying with the law.
Non-compliance then, eh? Mass civil disobedience, non-compliance. It's a brilliant
don't
idea.
Don't pay our taxes, they'll run out of money so quickly. And of course, they'll then bring a few token cases, but it won't make any difference. If millions said we're not going to pay our taxes until this nonsense stops, Theresa May will realise what a big mistake she's made. Never before have I advocated such a thing, but so flagrant has been the manipulation of the law, the flagrant defiance of the law, indeed, by the highest courts. There's this ludicrous so-called Supreme Court that we now have in Britain. It used to be the House of Lords, and the House of Lords sat as a separate legislative, judicial chamber. It had a few legal peers, and they could be trusted to give proper judgments. But then when that stopped, and it became, I think it was one of Tony Blair's ghastly reforms, and it became the so-called Supreme so-called Court, it has been a rampantly left-wing political body. There's only one right-winger on it. The rest of them, and there are about a dozen, are all left-wing members of the establishment who will at every turn do down the ordinary people. And I think the time has come to say enough is enough. We're going to have to get rid of the Supreme Court. We're going to have to get rid of the jurisdiction of the European so-called Court of so-called Justice, which has always been nothing but intégriste. Its sole aim is to make sure that more and more power is transferred from elected hands here to unelected hands of the commissars in Europe.
Absolutely,
and we say no to all of this.
Absolutely. Christopher Monckton is our guest. You know, when you talk about left wing, Christopher, I grew up in a working class housing estate. My family are all trade unionists. I'll tell you what annoys me. Socialism is incompatible with membership of the European Union, and you can't get this through the thick skulls of left social democrats, which are not really socialists but pretend to be. It can't be. Socialists have banged on forever and a day, including myself, about taking power back for ourselves. So how is that compatible with membership of the European Union? It's a joke,
well,
isn't it?
You make a very good point there. Of course, the Jeremy Corbyn, who is not just a socialist but a communist, doesn't like the EU.
No.
Because even though the EU is essentially structured, what has happened is when the Soviet constitution collapsed, the EU effectively adopted it. And the EU now has a Soviet constitution, where the various parliaments of the member states and the European Parliament are mere dumas. They are mere talking shops which have no real power. All the power is in the unelected commissars. That's the central committee of the European Union. It is essentially a communist structure, which is why you'd think that Mr. Corbyn would like it, but he doesn't, because he realizes that although it's a communist structure, there are still free marketeers on the loose in the system who wouldn't give it the kind of extreme socialism that he would like to see. And so he is at the moment against the EU, but I think that's going to change. I think gradually you'll see Corbyn and the others migrating towards being in favour of the EU, precisely because it is now so left-wing, it is so centralist. Of course, like all modern communists and socialists, it has complete contempt for the ordinary working classes, what used to be called the proletariat. Indeed, of course, if you read Lenin, for instance, he also had
contempt. That's right.
For the proletariat. The working classes were never well served by communism or any extreme form of socialism. But the EU, which has complete contempt for the working classes and complete contempt for the vote of the British people, the only way out is the door. We're just going to have to leave. And but the trouble is, it's very difficult to see what we can now do to stop it. When the Maastricht Treaty thing came through, I was able to go to the Court of Session in Edinburgh. I was in Scotland at the time, and apply for judicial review of the decision of the government to spend money on the social chapter when Parliament had said it shouldn't. And that very nearly brought the government down, had it not been that a couple of the bureaucrats had quietly inserted a line into the previous year's EU budget, obliging member states to spend money on the social chapter, even if they weren't in the Maastricht Treaty's arrangements, the government would have fallen. But there's nothing we can do this time, because they saw that coming and they passed an EU Withdrawal Act, which is already on the statute book. And I read that the other day in preparation for working out what we can do to stop all this mess. And one of the things it says, and you won't believe this, but this is how dictatorial this has now come. This is how desperate the establishment has become. It says that any minister of the Crown may alter any enactment, any law that's already on the statute book. He can alter it without Parliament's permission, without going through any repeal or bringing forward a new law. He can change that law simply by issuing a decree. And this is the first time, as far as I know, in the entire history of Britain, where ministers of the Crown have been given the arbitrary power to rewrite any statute to their liking.
I did not know that, Christopher. You'll do us a favour, won't you, later on? Send me a link on Skype over through Skype, or I can have a look at that. That's it's unsurprising, but it's news to me. What about the likes of Jacob Rees-Mogg and Boris Johnson, who have seemed, and I say seemed in inverted commas, aghast at the way things have been going. There's almost,
well, I know that Rees-Mogg is aghast because he and I sort of occasionally appear on the rubber chicken circuit or on the television down here in the West Country.
Yeah, you think he's genuine?
And he certainly is horrified at the, again, the deliberately unconstitutional sort of flouting of any normal process of law which this government has been engaging in. And the sole purpose of this breaking the law, which is going on with in concert with the EU, that's what's being negotiated behind closed doors. Theresa May has been sitting there with Mr. Juncker chuckling to them, and they've been chuckling to themselves as they say, right, then we'll do this and we'll do that and we'll thwart the whole Brexit process. That's what she's been up to. And of course, she was caught out when it eventually became clear in the Attorney General's
Geoffrey Cox's advice,
legal advice, that the so-called Brexit backstop, which she and Geoffrey Cox, the Attorney General, had tried to indicate was temporary, really, and neither of us would have wanted to carry it on. His advice privately to the government, which he was eventually forced to disclose, and again, I think a legal first that a government should be found in contempt of Parliament. So he had to publish it. And there it was. He said it is in international law. That backstop is indefinite and there's nothing
we can do
on our own to get out of it. And that was what the advice was privately. And of course, he didn't say anything like that as plainly as that publicly. And nor did she. She lied to the House. She lied to the public. And she lied again when caught out to the effect that she had said that we were indefinitely in the backstop, when in fact she hadn't.
And so, Christopher, very sorry to interrupt you there. And Ian Blackford attempted to make this point at PMQs yesterday. And Berko, the Speaker, cited the usual old law, the old code of conduct. You can't imply that you were deliberately misled, but it's patently obvious that May was deliberately misleading Parliament and the country.
Oh, yes. I mean, and Geoffrey Cox, the whole government. Is. And that's why when I saw that in this second case, this curious business of the Spanish Advocate General advising the European Court that you could interpret the treaty in a manner, the Lisbon Treaty, in a manner directly contrary to its express terms, then I realized that this was the entire establishment. They didn't care. They don't care what the law says. They are going to get their way regardless. And there's nothing much we can do about it except
civil disobedience.
I've ever wanted to do this because there's no other way for us. We must simply stop paying our taxes.
Well, you know, we're on Twitter, of course, and we get hundreds of tweets during a live show. There has been dozens of tweets celebrating that Christopher Monckton, Viscount Monckton of Brenchley, is saying that he advocates people saying enough is enough, no payment of taxes until the legitimate and lawful result of the referendum is delivered. Christopher, we've had this out before, you and I. Look, my fellow countrymen rejected Nice and rejected Lisbon. The European Union said, no, you don't. You'll go back and vote again until you give us what we want. In the event that it's not going to happen, I don't believe Brexit will happen. It seems that you don't either. What do you think will happen? What will people do? Will they rise up or will they just take it?
It's not just the second time
that
a country has been made to have another referendum and reverse itself. It has happened in Ireland. It also happened in Denmark, if you remember.
And France.
And France is about three then now. Yeah. Now we would be the fourth. This is beginning to stink to high heaven. This is so outrageous. That's why I think that those of us who have been campaigning for years to break free of this, everything they are now doing with our establishment ganging up with the European establishment against the people, it shows how wrong I was in 1975 in voting for and campaigning for membership of what was then the European Economic Community. And it then transmogrified itself into this hideous communist superstate, where now any law that gets in the way of the will of the elite is simply flouted. And I don't think that is acceptable. So the next thing is to discuss what in civil service called the modalities, which is how do you withhold your taxes and get away with it? Well, now, the mechanism that one would use for this is that a covenant would be drafted out which is an agreement between all the people who sign up to it, saying we will not pay our taxes and we will come to the aid and support of anyone who is bullied by the government for not paying his taxes. And if enough people, if you get, say, 1 million people signed up to that, and I think that would be quite easy, you know, of the 17 or 18 million who voted to leave, I think we'd certainly get 1 million of those to sign up to such a covenant. Then what would happen is that the government would realize that it was going to lose very serious and very large amounts of revenue. We could actually make the government go bust because there simply wouldn't be enough cash to keep it going. And it couldn't move against 1 million of its own citizens. It's just, there's too many of us. So we are doing what the gilets jaunes, the yellow jersey people in France are doing, but instead of throwing paving stones and setting fire to things, which I always think is a rather useless form of protest, we can do it much more cleverly by saving ourselves some money. We simply say we will put our tax money aside and we will not pay taxes from the moment when it becomes clear that the law is being flouted and we have no way out of that. And the moment that European so-called court of so-called justice pronounces in favor of what its advocate general from Spain has said, the moment it does that, that is the moment when we know that there is no law in this country or in Europe to which we can turn or upon which we can rely, which they will not set aside for the sake of doing us down. And at that point, when there is absolutely nothing we can do, Parliament is powerless, we are powerless, at that point, it's time for us to stop paying until once again the governing class decides in a solemn and binding fashion that it will in future abide by the law of the land.
Great stuff, Christopher. We'll leave Brexit just for a moment, although we're going to talk about migration, which of course is related. Let me just very quickly remind our listeners, we're live, folks. It's exactly 19 minutes to the top of the hour. Christopher's going to stay with me till the top of the hour. Christopher Monckton, the third Viscount Monckton of Brenchley, is live on the line from his home. We're talking Brexit betrayal this afternoon. Now we're going to talk about something very interesting that I've been covering all week on the programme. The 11th summit of the Global Forum on Migration and Development has kicked off already in Marrakesh. It's a week long thing, but the crux of this, or the meat of this, will be next week on the 10th and 11th of December. And just very briefly, let me remind our listeners what this is about. This is basically a call to protect the fundamental rights of the migrant workers of the world. It's basically a declaration or a decree that countries will sign up to. It's a UN thing. It isn't legally binding, but it's got a lot of people worried. And there's very interesting and very sinister language in this declaration, which can be downloaded through Google as a PDF file. You can read the entire thing. It's laid out in a number of different clauses. One of the clauses is very interesting. One of the articles, I should say, contained within is very interesting because it talks about the media conduct or media conduct when the media is discussing matters of migration. And there is a framework in there to basically criminalize or describe as hate speech language in the media which is critical of migration. Christopher, you're well aware of this. This is not good, is it?
Yes, indeed. And if you do download that document, you'll find that it is item 17
of
the list of items that they're planning to try and get agreement to. And of course, we know from looking at the climate thing that they start off with these non-legally binding agreements, and then they gradually, it's like toasting the frog. You know, you throw the frog into boiling water and it jumps out. But if you throw it into warm water and gradually increase the temperature until it's boiling, the frog doesn't jump out. That's what they do. They pass these non-legally binding agreements first. Then they wait until one or two member states have gone further than the rest and have passed laws saying you may not say that migration is a bad idea, otherwise that's hate speech. And then they have another international conference because these things, they've learned to do this annually so as to turn up the heat each year. And suddenly it becomes legally binding. binding, rather like the Paris climate agreement, where they did this. They tried at Copenhagen and failed because the Chinese blew it out of the water, because I briefed their leadership. Then they kept on trying and eventually managed to get it through in 2015. But of course, then Trump got elected in 2016. So that was thwarted. But they're trying the same technique here with the migration thing. And you are quite right, Richie. The danger in this business of calling anyone who questions whether migration on the scale that it's happening into Britain, for instance, at the moment, is a good idea, anyone who questions that, guilty of hate speech, is that this is a rampant control and limitation of freedom of speech. Now, if we were to call migrants second-class citizens who should be treated with contempt because they're ugly foreigners, that would be hate speech. And there is already law in place in many European countries against that kind of speech, and rightly so. What we must not be prevented from doing, however, is from saying that the sheer number of migrants being allowed into, for instance, Britain at the moment, is now so large that our national institutions cannot cope. I'm going to give you a bit of private information here. Last year, a team of senior NHS executives went round and visited every NHS trust in Britain and said that because of the scale of migration, the money to provide complete NHS coverage for everybody had run out, and that in a bad winter, thousands would die. And in the winter of 2017, when there was a cold snap and a bad flu epidemic, which the flu jab didn't really deal with, there were twice as many winter excess deaths as there would normally have been, because indeed the NHS could not cope. And this is not, repeat, not the fault of the NHS. This is the fault of successive governments of left and right, who have allowed unbridled immigration on a scale for which we, when I was working in government, had certainly not planned. It would have been unthinkable in my time at number 10 30 years ago that in just one generation since then, the population of these islands would have increased almost entirely as a result of immigration by 10 million. And this was on top of only 60 million before. It's an increase of 1/6 in only 30 years. There's no way that our institutions could cope with that. And the NHS is the first institution which had privately briefed all the chief executives right round the country of the trusts to say, we understand you won't be able to make ends meet. There's nothing we can do about it. Immigration is totally out of control. We've run out of money, and you're just going to have to do the best you can. Now, that has not been made public before, and I thought that it was now time that it should be.
Wow.
Because people need to know that immigration on this scale is not a question of, oh, we hate the blacks or we hate the foreigners or they're going to pinch our jobs, which are the usual kind of things you hear. I mean, on the far right, you'll hear things about hating the blacks. That has never appealed to me as an argument. But the thing about pinching our jobs, probably not true either, because what it does do, however, is it drives down
wages. The wage level
in working class jobs. And that is a very bad thing for working people in this country, which is one of the main reasons. It's not racialism, it's economic. That's the main reason why working people in this country are against mass immigration. I'm against mass immigration not only for that very important reason, but also for the reason that institutions like the National Health Service, on which I, among others, depend absolutely to be kept alive, those are gradually going to become inaccessible to us because the sheer numbers of people now demanding to have access to it are simply grinding it to a halt. It can no longer cope on anything like the amount of money it's getting now, and there simply isn't, with the best will in the world, enough money to provide for this extra 10 million people to have access to the NHS.
No. Christopher, let me ask you a question on that. I've got a question. Yeah. Before I ask the question, again, what Christopher has described is true, and I'm going to get shot for this probably, but it isn't supporting unfettered immigration is not compatible with calling yourself a socialist. Because, as Christopher said, it's that unfettered immigration and economic migrants that have driven down wages and working conditions in the country. It's not the fault of the migrant, as Christopher Monckton has said 1,000 times in his life. It is not the fault of the migrant. Do not blame the migrant. Blame the civil servants and politicians and government officials who have made it so. Let me ask you that question, by the way.
Yeah.
What you said to me, those NHS executives who went around the country last year and gave that very stark warning, why did we not hear about that through the pages of the British national newspapers, and why did we not hear about it on British television? Why?
This was because it was a series of secret briefings.
Right.
I know about it because I know about many things. I used to work in government, so I get told things from within the system.
Your sources.
That otherwise, you know, other people wouldn't get. And that's what happened here. And I'm not going to say how I got it or who I got it from. And now that the story is out and, you know, you are breaking the news on your program, there will now be the father and mother of all inquiries to find out how I did find out. But the one thing they will not be able to do is to deny that this happened. It did happen. And I know it. And therefore, they and here's the point. If we bring this back to Marrakesh and what's going on there, if the people in Marrakesh got their way, these, you know, totalitarian dictators of the UN and so forth, if they got their way, what I have just told you, which is simply a matter of fact. And as you hear, there is nothing in what I say that in any way disrespects migrants or regards them as any less citizens than we are. It simply says that if you let them in numbers that are too large for us to cope, that is unfair, in particular to the working classes and in particular to those who depend heavily upon institutions such as the National Health Service, which are very sensitive to the number of people that they have to deal with. Now, under this UN so-called non-binding agreement, could very soon, in a few years from now, find that under some half-witted socialist government, measures will be brought in to say that nobody is allowed to challenge the scale of migration, because to do so is to commit
racist
hate. Now, of course, it isn't to commit hate speech, but you can see that this is how the extreme left now work. And the great thing about you, Richie, is that you are a steaming lefty, but you're not an extreme lefty. You're a kind of a sensible and rather entertaining lefty. So you and I can have a meeting of minds.
Flattery will get you everywhere, Monckton. Well, you know what it is, Christopher? Look, of course I'm, you know, at heart a trade unionist and a socialist, but I'm always open to listening to those who see the world differently to me, because I learn a lot from listening to people who see the world differently to me. Let me ask you one final question on the on the secret survey that was done by the NHS executives last year. Why wouldn't they make that public? It's in their best interest too. They should be screaming from the rooftops about it. Or is it because they don't want to be called racist?
No, the problem was that the government didn't want to be called racist. It was the government that organised for this briefing to take place. The briefing was by very senior civil servants who went around and visited each. It wasn't a survey, it was a briefing, organised by the government, at which civil servants and senior statisticians went round and briefed the chief executives and boards of every health trust in the land, explaining that the money was running out because immigration had gone beyond what we could now afford to handle. Now, the reason why this wasn't made public was that Theresa May and the cabinet generally knew that there would be an enormous outcry against this mass immigration if this news got out. And so they ordered the civil service
to gag them
quiet, and these briefings were therefore secret. And now, I don't think that on a matter like whether our NHS can continue in its grossly overstretched fashion because ministers have been careless in not getting immigration under control. And if you just look at last year's figures alone, migration from the outside the EU was just about at record levels again. This government has wholly failed to contain immigration. This is now a growing crisis, and yet again, We see a government that has so little trust in the common sense of the people that it refuses to tell the people necessary information that it only briefs privately to the health service, when we all, and you are quite right about this, Richie, we all should have been told about this, so that there could have been a proper national debate on whether immigration on the present scale is, to use the ghastly modern phrase, sustainable. The answer is, as we now know from this briefing to the NHS, it's not sustainable. Something like 25,000 more people than usual died last winter because the NHS could no longer cope.
On its knees. On its knees. Thanks
this
for
is large numbers dying here.
Yeah.
So this does matter. And yet again, we see the establishment. It's the same picture as with Brexit. It's the same picture as with climate change. We see the establishment adopting a view which is fundamentally detrimental to the interests of ordinary working people in this country. And I am becoming profoundly concerned at the increasing remoteness and lack of love on the part of those in government and those at the top in the civil service. They are not trusting us enough to let us know what's really going on. They're lying to us about Brexit. They're lying to us about the health service. They're lying to us about immigration. They're lying to us about climate change, and all for their own profit and for our cost, including now a very large cost in human lives.
Thanks for clearing that up for me, that it was government briefing the NHS Trust. You said it clearly the first time, I just got it muddled up. Thanks for that. In the couple of minutes we have left, I'm not virtue signalling, or I'm not being a lefty when I harp on about people don't blame the migrants, don't hate the migrants or the asylum seekers. They didn't make it happen. I'm not virtue signalling when I say that. That leads me to my next question. UKIP and its kind of dalliances with people like not only Tommy Robinson, but guys appearing with Gerard Batten, who guys who have been convicted of kidnapping people with weapons. Are UKIP lurching to the very hard right, and is that a worry for people who are of a conservative disposition? What do you think?
I am with Nigel Farage on this. As you know, Nigel resigned from
UKIP. Right.
And this is an extraordinary development. It didn't get as much coverage as it should have done, in my view. Nigel is a fascinating man. He, after all, managed to reopen the debate on immigration when he was leader of UKIP, and he was a most astonishingly successful leader. I mean, after all, he's the most successful politician in Britain since Margaret Thatcher. It was he who pretty much single-handed got us our referendum. If he walked away from the party that was so very much his, this is an appalling indictment of the, I think, the very poor judgment, if Gerard, who's a nice man underneath it all, will forgive me, but he has exhibited very poor judgment in mixing with these people who, as you say, have been or have advocated violence and are not moderate in their criticism of the rate of immigration. The thing that I think what Nigel did so brilliantly was he, although everybody accused him of being a racist, the accusations never had any force and never stuck. They were kind of ritual communist accusations that the left always make. But he wasn't and isn't a racialist. He always maintained an incredibly sensible tone about immigration, much as I hope we've done on this programme. We're not saying we don't like the blacks or the yellows or the pink ones with green spots. That is not in our vocabulary.
Of course not. No, absolutely not.
And so, you know, this is, you know, I'm after all a Christian, practicing but by no means perfect. And no Christian is allowed to regard any human being as inferior because he's got a better suntan than what I've got. I mean, the idea is absurd. And Nigel always managed to convey this enlightened approach to the immigration debate, saying it's not a question of where they come from, it's a question of how many of them there are over how short a time and whether our institutions can cope. And that is a legitimate and proper concern. And if Gerard Batten had confined himself to that concern, he would be in a much more powerful position today than he is. I think what's going to happen as a result of Brexit is that there's going to be a new political alignment in which people like you And people like me are going to find common cause against this grasping establishment, which is gradually throttling the democratic life of this nation. And there's going to be a sort of people's uprising party, which will come forward and say, enough is enough. We're going to have to sweep the old order away and have democracy at the heart of our national debate and government once again.
That's a great place to leave it, Christopher. Thanks for your time today. I really appreciate you coming on, and this year when you've been on as well. Sincere, warm wishes to you and your family, and Merry Christmas to everybody associated with you. Have a great time. Happy New Year. And I look forward to speaking to you in the new year as this develops as well. Thanks again, Christopher.
God bless you, Richie. God bless all your listeners, and happy Christmas all round.
Thank you very much, sir. Bye for now. Christopher Monckton, live on the line from his home. Great to hear from him. We'll pick this up again with him, of course, no doubt, in the new year as this develops. Right, it's time to move on. Loads of tweets, by the way, came through as I was speaking with Christopher. I will get to some of those in a minute. First, though, we'll pause with a tune. No harm in a tune, eh? It's a Thursday's programme, December 6th, 2018. I'm Richie Allen. We're approaching 6pm UK time. And we're live on Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio, TriggerWarning.tv and RichieAllen.co.uk. This is the Lighthouse Family.
I really love
Lighthouse Family and Lifted on the Richie Allen Show. I've had Christopher back on since we had the big argument over David Icke. People think that this is the first time. He's been on twice since we had that shouting match when Christopher was talking about David and reptilians, and we had a proper ding-dong over that, which was very funny. And people are very funny. You know, I see this all the time. Whenever I criticise conduct or content by certain people in the so-called independent media. And of course, I never make it personal. It's never been personal with me, ever. I criticise the content. Play the ball, not the man or the woman. People lose their shit. You've got to have thick skin, folks, you know. Christopher Monckton's got very thick skin. I've got very thick skin. I can argue with somebody about something and criticise somebody about something. And then the following day, you know, praise them for something they've done or just move on. The idea that because we had this ding-dong 18 months ago about David Icke, that he wouldn't be back on the programme again. He's been back on twice since then. Doesn't matter. You know, you can disagree with somebody and find common ground with them. It's important that we understand that, you know. It's like I had a fairly heated discussion on Twitter 6 or 7 months ago with Piers Robinson from Sheffield University because he was behaving like a snowflake over things I'd said about some of his pals. But I'll stand alongside Piers Robinson and fight for him when newspapers like the Huffington Post are demanding that he be, well, not demanding, but strongly suggesting that he isn't fit to teach at Sheffield University. I won't have that. I won't put up with it, and I'll stand alongside him. People need to develop thicker skins, you know. I said this today. David tweets, cartoon drunk. It was funny when he said the Queen is manifestly not a lizard. That's right. It was great radio. It was hilarious. The Queen is not a lizard. Absolutely. That's what he said. I'm not saying absolutely. I don't know what the Queen is. I don't know that she is a lizard, in case you're wondering. I've never said she is, and I don't know that she is, but I don't know that she's not either. Andy Newman, how you doing, Andy? Hi to Ricky, hi to David Stanford. I did say yesterday, David, there would be no Christmas tunes on the programme today. I've got to honour my commitments. Hi to Patrick Vidine, how you doing, Patrick? Richie, Christopher certainly has a lot of incisive views and information. Good having him on. There'd be a lot of things I wouldn't agree with. I'm not a free market capitalist. I'm not a libertarian. I'm not an anarcho-capitalist. I'm not sure that Christopher Monckton would identify as any of those, but he wouldn't be too far away from that. But I wouldn't be. But so what? It's great to have him on. It's great to have people on like Jeff Berwick, people who disagree with me. I enjoy those conversations more than I enjoy speaking with people who agree with me. In light of comments I made on the programme yesterday about certain so-called independent content creators, I had an email from somebody who said that I was a bit of a hypocrite criticising people when I've had people on who have talked about vaccines and nanoparticles and nanobots. Listen, when I've had people on the programme talking about nanobots and nanoparticles in vaccinations, I've not sat there agreeing with them. The platform is here to allow people to talk about those things, but I'm not endorsing it. And I'm often pointing out, often, listen, what you're saying is a theory about nanobots. I'm interested in it, but it's a theory. I don't do the Jeremy Paxman thing, shouting at people and telling them, you can't prove it, you can't prove it, you can't prove it. We know they can't prove it. But just because they can't prove it doesn't mean that it isn't so. So when I criticise the independent media, don't come back on at me to say, oh, you let people say outlandish stuff on here, Richie. Not without challenging them, I don't. And not without pointing out, even if it is gently, that, well, look, it's a theory, isn't it? Let's be honest about it. It's a theory. Good to have you on talking about it, but it's a theory. That's all I'm saying. Hi to Amanda in Brum, which is in Birmingham. How you doing, Amanda? Thanks for listening in. First time listener, I believe. Might not ever listen again. So thanks for being with us, Amanda. Hi to Moinga again, and to everybody else who's tweeting. A lot of tweets have come in today, especially bearing in mind the subject matter. Now, shall we introduce our next guest, shall we? Shall we introduce our next guest? I'm looking forward to speaking with him. It's a wonderful thing producing and presenting a programme like this, because I find wonderful bits of audio on social media where men and women are beautifully explaining things that sometimes I take ages to explain. And yesterday afternoon, I played some audio from Jerry Day, an Emmy Award winning television producer. Why did I play the audio from Jerry? Well, because Jerry talks a lot about smart meters and EMF fields, electric fields, and how exposure to these things is dangerous. He runs a YouTube channel. In fact, we're just going to get him on now. We're going to get him on and we're going to talk to him now. Now, the reason I called Jerry is because it was reported in the British press yesterday. In fact, it was reported in the Daily Mail and in a number of the tabloid newspapers here that utility companies have been misrepresenting themselves to British customers. They have been lying to them. When British customers have not taken up the opportunity of having a smart meter, because the utility companies have targets, they have been lying to UK customers. They have been threatening them with bailiffs or sheriffs, which is against the law. The government admitted that its target to have a smart meter in every home in the UK by 2020 is way behind. I'm excited that my next guest has agreed to come on the programme. He's an Emmy Award-winning television producer, writer, and he is a host and activist on freedom and rights issues. And his website and his YouTube channel have been viewed by millions of people, where he has educated millions of people about the hazards and harm caused by advanced electronic utility meters, which we know as smart meters. You can find them on YouTube. His YouTube channel can be found using the name Mini Van Jack. Couldn't be simpler. Mini Van Jack. But he's also found at emfhelpcentre.com or freedomtaker.com. Big thanks to Jerry Day for coming on the programme. Jerry, it's an honour to meet you. How are you?
Richie, greetings from you from across the pond. Great to join you today.
Ah, you're a gentleman, sir. Thanks for coming, because I didn't give you much notice. I called you yesterday because this is so topical in the UK today. And I know you're travelling this morning, so it's a real gift that you've agreed to come on. My listeners, do you know, it's funny that I reached out to you. You were mentioned in a book written by a man you may have heard of called David Icke. He's mentioned you in a couple of books because of your work. And my listeners know all about you. So when I said Jerry Day is coming on, listeners all over the place. Fantastic, Richie. Great to get him on. Jerry, were you aware that utility companies in the UK have been basically breaking the law in a very serious way by threatening people that they must have these smart meters? Is that news to you?
No, it's certainly not, because U.S. Power companies are behaving exactly the same way.
Wow.
They have completely abandoned the rule of law, and of course they're imposing radiation, surveillance, fire hazard, dirty electricity on private homes, private properties without consent, and it's shameful. And obviously, we don't have the court protections we need. We don't have the law enforcement protections we need, and it's a very difficult situation.
Take us back to the beginning, Jerry. Imagine you're speaking to somebody, because a lot of our listeners are very new to this information. Many of them are not, but a lot of them are. Imagine it's day one. They're happy to get a smart meter. They're told that it's going to make your bills fairer. Your bills will be fairer. You'll save energy. Everything is great. It's all on the up and up. Speak to the brand new listener who's never heard this before. Go back to the beginning when you first started to understand smart meters. What are they? Why should we be worried?
Well, the first thing I noticed was that they are designed to be nothing more than a surveillance device. So this is a global surveillance program. It's being implemented all over the world, every developed country, everywhere there's organized utility, grid utility. They are trying to force and implement this program. When I was in Burbank, California, near Los Angeles, many years ago, say 6-7 years ago, you know, when they were introducing these things, it was very clear to me that this was a surveillance device, and what they have done is taken the utility meter, which is intended for one purpose only, and that is to show you gross monthly usage, and inserted a highly sophisticated electronic device into that, which is, once you analyze these electronics, it is nothing more, nothing less than a surveillance device. It is a data gatherer, data recorder, data processor, data transmitter. And the data that it's collecting is high-resolution usage, time-of-day usage, and that means that they can recognize your current draw profile. And what that means is that when you turn on your hairdryer, they know you turned on your hairdryer. They see when you turned it on, they identify the appliance, and they will even be able to identify whether the appliance is working properly or not. If the appliance has bearings loose or motor problems, they even can recognize that. They can see the exact current draw profile. And so whatever electrical item you decide to use in your house, you will be fully exposed to law enforcement, to insurance companies, to other marketers, hackers, criminals, who, wherever this data may wind up. They don't get your consent to collect this data. They don't tell you what they're doing with it. They don't tell you who's looking at it. They don't tell you who they're sharing it with and who they're selling it to and how much money they're making by doing so. We have heard direct quotes from some of our organizers of the utility industry that they intend within a very short number of years to receive more income from the data they are collecting than the electricity they're selling.
No way, Jerry. Is that right?
They have admitted that publicly.
They'll sell the data and they will make more from that than selling the energy.
So you ask yourself, how is it that they could possibly make that much money on the energy? And the way they're going to do it is to exploit your personal data of your living and private personal living habits inside your home and share that data with others who may have some means or another to exploit that data to extract wealth from you. Now, that would be law enforcement, that would be insurance companies, that would be lawyers, that would be all kinds of people. Anyone who's got the money can buy this data. And it is, in our country, we have the Fourth Amendment of the Bill of Rights, which says you may not access personal records of a private individual on their private property. Strictly unconstitutional. They're doing it anyway. The courts are not protecting us from it. And the reason we have that protection is that once the central authorities know what you're doing every minute of the day inside your home, they have extremely high potential for control and manipulation of your behavior. And of course, access to your, by taxation and by fees and penalties and this and that and behavioral regulations, they can strictly control the population, and they can up and up and up the revenues to central authorities by extracting this wealth by the utilization of this data. So this is high-resolution surveillance data. That was the purpose from the very beginning. That is the United Nations agenda, is to spy on and exploit every human being through every means of data collection possible. And the smart meter, and the, or you call it the electronic meter, smart meter is just a brand name, but electronic meter, utility meter, is the probably the premium and primary last access. You know, they know what you're doing with your credit card. They know what you're doing on your cell phone, on your telephone. All that data is being harvested. And now they have your personal living habits, every electrical appliance and device you flip on and off all day long inside your living quarters. So this is sort of the final nail in the coffin of any privacy we may have hoped to have.
A Trojan horse, Jerry, is the way you've described that, a Trojan horse. And in theory, in the future, you might get a knock on the door from somebody who might say that. I'm with, of course, in the UK, it would be Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs. In the United States, it would be the IRS might knock on your door and say, we have reason to believe that you might be running a business from your home.
Exactly. And that, of course, entails all kinds of fees and permits, both, I'm sure, in your country and ours.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Because we understand that the internet is being used a lot and at certain times, and we think you're making transactions. And wow, right. Jerry. And you're a lone voice. As far as I can see, somebody of your stature, you seem to be a lone voice in trying to raise awareness of this. Because when I live in the suburbs of Manchester, so about 2.5 miles from the city. And I talk to my neighbours about this stuff. My landlord is a good guy, Jerry. My landlord. And he said, Richie, you refuse the meter if you want. Don't worry about it. I will stand by that as your landlord. And I said, that's wonderful. But I speak to my neighbours about it and I can't get it through to them. And they're like, no, it's a great thing, Richie. My bills won't be overestimated. People are so broke, Jerry. People are struggling so badly that they think this is brilliant. I won't be getting these estimated bills. And it's great. Richie, you're wrong. They're not even concerned about the pulsing of it. And I think you've uncovered evidence, Jerry, that these companies lie about the extent of the radio waves emitted from these things. They downplayed the strength of the frequency. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. They lie about it continually. In the U.S., I can't believe the absence of any morals, ethics, legal behavior. It's criminal behavior. You know, when you invade someone's house with radiation, surveillance, fire hazard, dirty electricity, without consent, without knowledge, without any disclosure, my God, how can you be more criminal? And when you confront them about it and you say, oh, you're breaking the law. So this was my original approach to the utility company. I'm sorry, sirs, you're breaking the law. Would you care to go from the criminal side to the lawful side at this point? And their answer was no, and go ahead and sue me. And so, you know, there's a bullying, arrogant and bullying attitude on the part of the power company. They look at you and they say, we are a government protected monopoly.
Untouchable.
You are dependent on our service. What do you think you can do about it? And so we will continue being criminal and invading your privacy and harming you with radiation and dirty electricity and all this. We will continue to harvest our surveillance data, and we bid you good day. So that is, unless you would prefer to have us terminate your electric service. And so what I have done is I've developed workarounds, ways for people to actually get remedy and mitigate without going into direct face-on confrontation with the power company. The face-on confrontation does not work. You cannot negotiate with criminals. You cannot deal with criminals. You cannot ever enter into contract with criminals and expect that contract to be honored, obviously. These are criminals. So what you do is you work around it. And I would suggest people who have questions about how to do that would look at my website, emfhelpcenter.com. And there's a center column right on the homepage entitled Solutions. And there is a wealth of information, links and downloads and resources right there. That is where it is. And that is brand new. We just updated that recently to give people a new, fresh approach of, shall we say, avoiding the problems rather than confronting them.
That's brilliant.
To work around them. Yes.
That's great, Jerry. Solutions. You can give us one or two solutions or the Cliff Notes in a moment if you want. But I want to I want to stay with the devices. By the way, Liz is listening to this program, Liz Jones, and she's tweeted. We get a lot of tweets. She says, the gentleman who read my meter said, he was a utility company representative, when he saw that I have the original old meter, he told me not to get a smart meter as my bills would go up. I said I didn't want one, but for other reasons. That's an interesting thing. Some of our listeners have said to me in the past that once they got the smart meter, these are listeners who didn't know any better, and then the smart meter was installed, they said their bills actually got higher, not lower, as they were promised. Isn't that incredible?
It's customary. Sometimes as many as four times higher.
Four times higher. Wow.
There's many reports of that where the billing essentially goes wild. And they go back to estimated billing if you complain, or they go back to some other way of doing it. But generally, what they're not telling you is that this is new technology. They do not have their computers handling the data properly yet, and they have no idea what to bill you. And they just shoot the highest number they can imagine at you just to see if you're stupid enough to pay it. And then if you're not, then they go, oh, okay, well, people will say to them, I did not increase my usage. In fact, I went on vacation that month, and my bill tripled. This is wrong. And they'll say, no, that's your smart meter is much more accurate. They'll play games with you, bully you, try to lie to you. And then if you hold out, they'll finally say, well, we'll estimate. We'll go to, we'll average your last 6 months bill or whatever they do. That's USA. I don't know. I would hope and assume that UK has a very different approach, or at least some kind of different approach. I certainly would expect that because we have a different, central authority structure and all that. But generally, our power companies are privately held, but they're protected by government monopoly protections. So they are highly independent and arrogant and do as they wish without recourse, without, any.
Wow. Jerry, let me remind our listeners of your website. Go to emfhelpcenter.com. That's Help Center, CENTER, emfhelpcenter.com, freedomtaker.com. It's really important that we're speaking with Jerry Day this afternoon. Jerry is an Emmy Award-winning television producer, writer, host and activist, and he has helped many people in the millions to understand the hazards of these devices, which we call smart meters. The Minivan Jack is where you can find them on YouTube. That's all one word, Minivan Jack, M-I-N-I Van Jack. And I've been browsing that. It's terrific stuff. Great presenting skills, Jerry. You've got a wonderful way of explaining things to people in a way they can understand it. No, sincerely, you really do. What about the Internet of Things, Jerry? That eventually the fridge, the television, the toaster, all of this stuff is going to be connected. That's what they want, right?
Well, of course, and the appliances are already being manufactured in that configuration where they will have transmitters in all the appliances. And apart from the surveillance and apart from knowing, they're reading the some of the remote barcoding sensors on the products will have sort of RFID chips. So they will know, whether you have ice cream in your refrigerator. They will know how much of it you eat. They will know whether or not that represents a health hazard. And they will know whether or not that should represent higher health insurance premiums for you if you happen to pay that kind of thing. I know you have a public health service, but the public health service will say, you're getting a bad citizenship score because of the ice cream you're eating or whatever. The example I like to use is the young woman who's a single mother who has two children who has decided to go to parent-teacher meetings, school meetings in the evenings, and she's using her hair dryer. And we have something in the States called Child Protective Services. I'm sure you have an equivalent. And these are basically parental police who come around, and if they find egregious violations of child's rights and health and safety, they actually remove
the children. Take your child.
From home. Yeah. They remove the children, but they unfortunately have been incentivized to do so by profiteering. They gain state revenues for each child they remove from the home. So they go out and they search for people to victimize as far as breaking up families. And what they do with this young woman who is using her hairdryer four times a night is they put an algorithm on that. And the algorithm says, this woman must be a partier. She must be out at the bars drinking. She's using her hairdryer four times a night.
Unbelievable.
So they send Child Protective Services to raid and investigate that home, and in some cases remove children when there isn't even a violation, just based on the presumptions granted to them by the algorithm. So it's highly dangerous in terms of abuse of authority and abuse of power by central authorities. I don't know if you have an equivalent agency that does that looks after children.
Yeah, but we do. And Jerry, it's quite amazing to be speaking to you because of your background in film and television. Through the 70s and 80s, most of the films that were made, science fiction films that were made, set 30, 40 years into the future, they were always dystopian, weren't they? They were always very negative, perspectives of how the future would be. But what we're describing, these case scenarios you're describing, are not just possible, they are probable. You could have a situation where you have paid State Farm, which is obviously a big health insurer. We've got Bupa here in the UK, pay your private health insurance. Then you need to go to hospital for a serious operation. And you're told, well, you know, we've got evidence that you've not been eating properly and you've been eating high calorie dinners and TV dinners. And we know this because we have access. So I'm sorry, but we're going to have to decline your coverage. That isn't ridiculous. That's actually probable, Jerry.
Well, that's the purpose of utility metering. That data is what they want in order to bring those types of controls upon you. And, we're seeing, I don't know if you're following what China's doing right now with their social scoring.
Social credit. Oh, yeah, we are, yeah. Talk about that, Jerry. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the reports just out yesterday or today that they have now officially denied 15 million people access to air and train travel because of their social score. So this is the government deciding what behavior is acceptable and penalizing you severely, personally, and in a very real and present manner in order to control that behavior. Now, apparently, they don't give you an opportunity. Once you have gotten your low social score, you're stuck there. There's no provision in China for, here's how you may fix your score. Here's how you may observe your score. Here's how you may get access to our records and you may petition for a correction of errors. No, none of that. It is, you have a low social score. You may not get on an airplane. You may not get on a train, and you are going to be penalized. And by the way, people who socialize with you will have their social score reduced as well. So you can imagine the absolute chilling effect of that, the control over social behavior in the country. And this is not the kind of behavior that makes you a better citizen. This is the kind of behavior that bolsters the power of government.
Terrorizes people.
Government will be penalizing you if you do not, revere government, basically. So it's government administering the rules. So government is doing that as anyone always does for their own benefit. So it is not something that is intended to improve society. It's intended to increase the power and control of government. And to assure that government is all-powerful and always in control.
Do you know, Jerry, when you're speaking there, I was thinking of the English journalist who put a video on Twitter a couple of months ago. He was in China and he was on the bullet train, and I think he was near Shanghai. And the train was in a station, and a voice came over the loudspeaker system. It was, first of all, in Chinese, then in English. And it warned people about not hanging around the ticket counters, about not loitering, about not dropping litter. And basically the warning was that it could affect your social credit score, your credit score. I mean, that's even worse than Orwellian, isn't it? I mean, Orwell, we are probably now where Orwell thought we might get, but even Orwell probably couldn't see that coming. Maybe
he
did.
It's crazy because they can come up with any behavior they want, any control they want, and they say it's just basically a raw, bare command. Do this or we will damage your credit score. Do that or we will damage, and they can come up with anything, anytime, any day. The rules can change. It's whatever mood they're in today. You must do that or your credit score is damaged and your ability to function in society. They say their idea, the purpose of damaging this credit score is to bankrupt people. So destroy your ability to financially operate within society. And imagine the kind of life you would have after you were no longer able or permitted to enter into commerce. You're going to basically wind up homeless, starving in the rain, and dying.
Jerry, here's a question for you. Two questions. Just before I ask you about what you've just said, which is really important, briefly, Faisal asks a brilliant question on Twitter. He says, all the Wi-Fi transmission and pulsing, which uses electricity from the smart meter, is that tacked onto your bill? That's an excellent question.
They steal your electricity to power their surveillance device.
Wow.
Yes, they do. There's no other place they could get it from. They use a device called a switching mode power supply, and that switching mode power supply withdraws current from your incoming current and disrupts your incoming current sine wave integrity. It's like putting a stick in a stream and you create the turbulence. You now have dirty electricity, and your lines are then emitting waste electricity 6 to 8 feet into all your rooms, and that waste electricity is called dirty electricity, and it is harmful and damaging to human biology, any living thing. And this is there's a book by Sam Milham called Dirty Electricity, and he identifies he correlates a massive global cancer epidemic with the institution of electricity in the 1920s. Of course, they didn't have very proper control of electricity at that time. There was huge amounts of dirty electricity, and in the cities, when they installed all the electricity, there would be a cancer epidemic following 5 years later. And then 20 years later, when electricity was utilized in the countryside and finally got out to the rural areas, there was a 5-year lag and a cancer epidemic there. So the correlation is undeniable, that electricity itself leads to cancer exposures and risks. So yes, this is something that the utility meter is now causing and putting back into homes. After we learned how to do proper wiring, we learned how to do grounding, we learned how to keep the wires tight together so their magnetic fields cancel each other. We learned all this, but now they completely violate that whole principle. And anyone who designs an electronic utility meter is an engineer, understands electricity, and knows they are doing this. They know it. It's intentional criminal malfeasance to put this switching mode power supply into your electronic meter. It's not a place where any electronics belong, any power supply type equipment belongs. There is only one thing that a utility meter should be doing, and that is recording your electricity gross usage monthly. And of course, when they take this electronics and put it in there, there's no longer any point in putting a surge protector in there. And you get surges on these electric lines, 20,000, 10,000 volts per surge. And these meters simply explode because they have fine electronics in them. And there's no point in putting the surge protector in, because even with a surge protector, the electronics would be destroyed. And so they just simply remove the surge protector. What does that do? That makes a fire hazard of every single electronic meter that's installed. And in the United States, we have thousands of them causing fires every year, every month, whereas the old electromechanical, the standard, the old legacy meters never caused such fires.
Why don't we hear about it in the nightly news, these fires? I know that might sound like a stupid question, but I've got to ask it. Why don't we hear about it?
Very clearly, because the nightly news is paid by advertising, and the advertisers are your friendly utility company.
Yeah. That makes sense. I've got two or three quick tweets I want to read, Jerry. Before I do that, though, I want to remind our listeners, Jerry Day is our guest, emfhelpcenter.com, freedomtaker.com. I'm so glad that I stumbled across Jerry. I really am. Mini Van Jack is where you find Jerry on YouTube. Everybody in the world needs to know this information. I really mean that. A couple of really quick tweets. Patrick Power tweets, smart meters, Richie, it's even worse. Effectively, the state can send commands to the house and devices. Example, you cannot use your washing machine between 7 and 9. They might do this to manage demand on the grid. They can do this to whole towns or regions. Excellent point. Patricia is listening in Switzerland, old friend of ours. She says, Richie, Uber has a credit score. Would it be totally off the wall to suggest that it is the beginning of getting people used to the credit score system? Most people that use Uber just do it, no questions asked. That's a brilliant point. And that brings me to the next point, Jerry. You talked brilliantly about the credit score system and how it could impact on somebody's ability to do business, to use commerce, which is a devastating thing for somebody if they're blocked out. Do you believe the seeming rush towards a cashless society, which we are witnessing everywhere in the world, cash is disappearing, you can use your phone to pay, contactless payments, this has got to be all related, Jerry. It must be connected.
Well, of course. The cashless society is the great dream of the authoritarian. And what we're doing, and even Bitcoin falls into that category.
Yeah, I agree.
All of the cryptocurrencies are fully trackable and fully identifiable by the powers that be. They know how to invade those online networks to discover that information. And so the cashless society represents a situation where every single penny that you transact in will be tracked and will be identified and will be taxed and will be, in some cases, penalized, and certainly in all cases known. So to enter a cashless society is to give up your independent will, you know, to give up your independent right to determine how you transact. You know, imagine you can enter into barter. Barter is one of the most difficult and clumsy types of transaction methods we have, but it's the only one left where you can actually privately transact after you go into the cashless society. You're trading, you know, chickens for bushels of wheat. You know, kind of world we would be degenerating into unless you didn't mind as if the powers that be are not taxing us enough already, as if they're not watching us and controlling us enough already, we will have total control. And obviously, what I guess with this kind of system, you could say the taxation and the fees and the penalties would go to the point just one degree south of open revolt. And, we're obviously not there yet. It sounds like France is getting there as we speak. The UK and the United States are still short of that objective, that apparent centralist, globalist objective. But we are headed for that, and that is certainly predictable if we allow these surveillance systems. The cashless society is a surveillance system. The electronic utility metering is a surveillance system. You know, to be surveyed upon, most people, unfortunately, I sadly to say, have completely forgotten the value of their privacy. And as Edward Snowden says, you don't want privacy because you have something to hide. You want privacy because everyone has something to protect, and their individual rights and their freedom and all kinds of travel, this and that. We need that to have a functioning, healthy society, and we cannot be constantly behaviorally driven by central authorities who tend to create and manifest programs for their own benefit at our expense.
Are you amazed, Jerry, at how willingly people give up their information? Wasn't Facebook a wonderful invention, wasn't it?
Oh, brother.
People give it all away, Jerry. I mean, you must have seen that when things like Facebook came around, it must have immediately set alarm bells off in your mind. This is the greatest data mining initiative there's ever been, right?
As soon, when Facebook first came out, everyone was signing up. And within weeks, I realized what they were doing, and I found a way to cancel my account, and it was not easy. You know, it's easy. You know, they invite you in, but they don't let you out. It's like Hotel California. You know, you can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave. And that's Facebook. Those things are hard to get rid of and hard to escape from. And of course, Facebook has now been discovered to be tracking the data of the people who know the people who are using Facebook. They use their fingers to go out through Facebook connections to other connections, Google and other connections, and they share data with all of the online social networking devices. And so we're far more exposed than we could ever imagine. Things are known about our lives that we could never remember. I would tell you, Richie, on August 3rd of 2001, 2009, August 3rd, 3 in the afternoon, where were you? You don't know. But that data could tell you instantly where you were and what you were doing and what devices you were using. and this and that, and how much you were spending and where you were spending it and what you were buying at that time. So imagine the amount of data that exists out there that other people have access to that you cannot even remember, that you will never be able to remember yourself.
Imagine you wanted to frame somebody for a murder, Jerry. It's very easy, isn't it? Because your location finder is always on your phone, and maybe you sent a tweet from, maybe you were visiting somebody in Arizona maybe for the day, and somebody was killed there, and you happen to be somebody that the state doesn't like very much, and they can use that as evidence against you. Imagine.
Exactly. Well, look at it this way.
Yeah.
If there are 20 people in the rough vicinity of any murder, it would be fairly easy to frame and prosecute any one of those 20 people having been identified as being at that location. So, yes, if the state doesn't like your looks, doesn't like how you behave, doesn't think you're a model citizen in its own set of standards, then you are certainly can be targeted. And are they not doing that? I mean, we have that in the United States, where our Attorney General Robert Mueller has spent 2 years now trying to fabricate, charges against the Trump administration.
That's right.
Without taking any partisan stance at all. If you look at their conduct, it's highly irregular in the way that they've done that. And so, we have the state using whatever data it can dredge up to satisfy its own purposes, under whatever ethical standards they choose to adopt.
This is mind-blowing stuff, folks. And the wonderful thing about this is sometimes when we do segments like this and we introduce people like Jerry, some people will say it's doom and gloom, but it isn't. Because if you go to emfhelpcenter.com, and I've been on there, there are practical solutions there. That's what this is all about, as to how you can fight back and push back against this crazy agenda that, you know, more and more people need to become aware of, because they're not hearing about this on CBS News or Fox News. Thank God for people like Jerry Day. Jerry, do you have children and grandchildren? And if you do, I suppose it gives you extra motivation to do this work, right?
Well, of course. I have nephews. I have not had children, but certainly I look at the world that they're going into, and I just can't even understand how they're going to cope with what's coming down the line. And I would like to say that you were talking about the resources at EMF Help Center. I hope that we can partner with a UK equivalent, that some I can trade links with some service provider. The UK will have different solutions, slightly different solutions, perhaps different legal structures. And so we very badly need an equivalent of EMF Help Center for the UK, so that we could trade links and help each other and possibly benefit from what we know about each other. But let's hope that we have someone that contacts me through emfhelpcenter.com in the UK, and that someone from the UK going to my website that needs more specific help on a specific issue would have a link where they could go and get local, possibly legal information and that and such.
Really good, Jerry. Folks, if you are listening to this and if you have looked into this and you have educated yourself in the way that Jerry has, contact him through his website. Please do that. EMFHelpCenter.com. Check Jerry out there. Go to YouTube.com. Minivan Jack. Just look for Minivan Jack. I'm going to put a link out to it on Twitter. An absolutely final question today, Jerry. Thanks for coming on, because I know you're going to be traveling in the next short while. Thanks for giving us your time. Final question. Are you optimistic? Mm-hmm. Are we going to break through this crazy dystopian Orwellian agenda? Are we going to rediscover eventually who we are, people? Are we going to do that?
Yes, here's how it happens. One person at a time. The individual is the fundamental element of society. And there is no central authority that will last forever. There is no central authority that can answer and solve every problem. There is no central authority that can avoid becoming corrupt and self-interested. And so the individual is where all solutions arise and are promulgated. And so it is something that we look at here in the States as individual rights, constitutional rights, self-determination. And I know that there's strong feelings of that all over the world. And so that is where our salvation lies. We are at the point now where our central authorities are so powerful and so rich and so secretive themselves, while they expose all of our information everywhere, that we have probably no choice to go in and petition and adjust and correct our central authorities and their governance policies. We probably no longer have the opportunity to do that. We are now going to be salvaging our lives one person at a time, one individual at a time. I have gone off-grid. I have solar power with no relationship with any utility company of any kind.
Brilliant.
I have batteries. I run my my house that way, and I have a well water, and I have a small tank propane. I do not have any utility service of any kind. That's one kind of approach you can take. Other kinds of approaches are any way that you can disconnect from central authorities, disconnect from these cashless society concepts, disconnect from these overall overarching one-size-fits-all urban planning, stack 'em, pack 'em, make 'em ride their bicycles, all this stuff, behavioral control. How do you find your individual potential, your individual way of living, your individual rights? How do you recover that for yourself, your family, your community, starting centrally with yourself, with a radiant, you know, sphere that goes out from you? Of course, you want to protect your family in the same way. Of course, you want to help those in your community and develop those relationships. That's how it's done locally, centrally, and from the individual out, not from the central authority down.
Jerry, it was an honor to meet you today. I mean that. I don't say that very often. It was an honor to meet you. No, it really was. Thanks for giving us your time. When I say...
Richie, thank you for what you do so much.
Not at all.
You're a fighter.
Well, you know, it's a platform for people like you. I'm not a researcher. I find gentlemen and ladies, like, you know, people like you, and I say, right, we've got... People have to hear this. And thank God that you come on. When I say you've got an open door to come back on the programme, I mean it. So in the new year, when there's news, come on, don't wait to be invited. Firstly, Jerry, and secondly, may I extend a sincere Merry Christmas to you, to everybody you know, to your nephews and your family, and thanks for the work you do. Marvellous.
And same to you and all your listeners, and thank you so much for your time.
Brilliant, Jerry. The pleasure is mine. It was an honour. Short notice as well. Thank you to Jerry Day. Let me again remind you, it is emfhelpcentre.com, emfhelpcentre.com. And if you go to YouTube, subscribe to Jerry. It's Minivan Jack, all one word, Minivan Jack, Jerry Day. The information on the YouTube channel alone is a gift, and it should be shared with everybody. Amazing stuff and an amazing guy. Really, really good stuff, that. Hugely interesting. Spoke about this briefly yesterday. Found a bit of audio from Jerry on YouTube, used it in the monologue yesterday and said, I've got to get this man on the programme. A number of you are saying there are so many facets to the smart meters. Of course there are. And on his website and on his YouTube channel, he gets into the deeper implications of the smart agenda. There's no doubt about that. But just speaking about that one aspect of it, that surveillance aspect of it, how it will play into the social credit agenda, which we're seeing in China, which is coming here. Patricia makes a great point. I've never used Uber. I drive, and if I go into town, now tomorrow, the future Mrs. Allen is home tomorrow morning from France. Tomorrow evening, we're going into town, we're going to see a concert in town, and we're going to have a pizza probably. I'll get a bus. I'm not drinking at the moment, but I'll get a bus. I don't use Uber, and I don't often use taxis because they've become very expensive in the city. Very expensive. Prohibitively expensive, I would say. So I've never used an Uber. An Uber has been phoned for me by somebody else once, but I've never used one. So I didn't know they have a kind of a social credit system. I think, Patricia, from what you're saying, I think you mean that the Uber driver rates the passenger, presumably, and vice versa, the passenger rates the driver. That's how it would make sense to me. But him talking about that and how that plays into the cashless society agenda, how it could strand somebody. You know, he said that millions of people already in China have been, and he's right because I've looked it up, have already been given temporary or permanent bans from using public transport or from flying because their social credit score is low. You know, it's a good point, you know. It's really interesting. when you make that point, we grew up on these thrilling science fiction films, some of which projected or predicted a horrible dystopian future where people would be basically slaves running around in fear of the establishment, of the authorities, of breaking a law or saying something out of turn. And here we are. We've arrived pretty much where these films many years ago, there's so many of them, you know, Blade Runner, Minority Report. There was an amazing one called Fortress with the French actor, what's his name, from Highlander, Christophe Lambert. There's so many of these films that look to this future. And we're here now. We're here. I came off Facebook, didn't I? Personally came off Facebook. When did I do that? 6 months ago, was it? Something like that, 6 or 7 months ago. And I informed, obviously, Facebook, it's all automated. You don't speak to anybody. But I informed it that I was coming off and I demanded my data. And I was helped to do that by a couple of friends of mine, people who have come on this program before, who are very clever and helped me do it properly, demand that not only should Facebook send me the data or data that it held on me, but it had to consent to immediately delete all of that. And there's a way of doing it. And I got an email saying that, yes, it's all being deleted, that Facebook no longer has it and it hasn't given it to anybody else. And I deleted all of it. What a bit of, you know, malevolent Machiavellian, what genius by the people behind Facebook. Don't think for a minute that Mark Zuckerberg had anything to do with Facebook. Genius that people would go on there and give them everything. I mean, I didn't give them everything. I used Facebook to talk up this program. And I would occasionally put a picture of Jazz and the future Mrs. Allen and myself maybe on there, but very little else. And, you know, I was amazed. I would sometimes gaze in wonder at the information that people were volunteering to Facebook. And I used to think there's a great irony here, because if a policeman or a policewoman was to stop many of the Facebook users, many of the people who use Facebook, if they were stopped in the street by a police officer and he or she asked them questions, you know, asked them about the, or asked them a question around some information that they'd put on Facebook, the person being asked on the street by the policeman or policewoman would probably be aghast. Can't believe it. How dare you ask me that question? It's none of your business. But 16 hours earlier, they gave that information freely on Facebook. You know, 'tis mad, I tell you. 'Tis mad. Same with Twitter. Amazing point Jerry Day made there about, Richie, what were you doing on the 7th of July 2009? Haven't a clue. But somebody knows. Somebody knows if you're using smartphones, if you're using tablets, if you're connecting wirelessly to the internet with your laptop. Somebody knows because you're putting it out there. Because your laptop, your tablet, your phone has a location device and it is pinging probably thousands of times a minute, probably it's pinging to various locations and it is very easy to identify where you are. And the implications of that, wow, the implications of that, you know, you were in Arizona on the 16th of July back in 2017. We've got an unsolved murder there. You were there. What were you doing? Maybe they've got some of your DNA, maybe. Why not? Maybe they've got your fingerprint. How could they have your fingerprint, Richie? Well, they could lift it off some diet Pepsi or full-fat Coke that you were drinking in Arizona, but they don't need to do that because you unlock your smartphone now with your thumbprint. So they have your bloody fingerprint. No pun intended. So they can say, well, we've got your fingerprint. Mad. And people are sleepwalking into this future, you know. Contactless payments. You thought contactless payments was bad enough. You thought that was bad enough. I've seen people now in supermarkets waving their phone at the machine. Their phone. It's unbelievable. Patricia got back on to say, Richie, yes, they rate each other. This is Uber. I've never taken it either, says Patricia. When friends and family taught me about this, basically judging each other, it freaked me out. The fact that people went along with it, no questions asked, is worrying. It is worrying. It's beyond that. With me, it frazzles me. I shake my head. I almost lapse into insanity. It actually, you get temporary insanity trying to understand how people can be so, not so much blasé about it, but so willfully complicit. They just go along with it. Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant. Cashless society. We don't need cash. You hear students now on Sky News when they vox pop students, and they have vox popped students about cash. Students, cash is alien to them. Alien. Very, very rarely. You see students now in Nottingham, going to Nottingham University, Derby, places like that. How often do you use cash? Well, now that I think about it, the last time I used cash is about 2 weeks ago. Of course, the Sky News presenter won't ask the most important question, which is, the following question should be, what would happen if something happened to your bank? Or if something happened to your account? Or if somebody shut your account down? They don't ask that question, of course. Right, I'm going to love you and leave you. It's the end of the programme. I want to give a big shout out to Jerry Day for coming on the programme. Big shout out to Jerry. Really important to have that subject discussed today in light of what's happened this week with utility companies threatening people about smart meters. Go to Jerry's website, emfhelpcentre.com. And again, big shout out to Christopher Monckton for coming on the programme. It's been nearly a year since Chris was on. Enjoyed having him back as well, talking about the Brexit betrayal and the Marrakesh Migration Forum, which takes place. Well, it's already going on, but the big deal is next week, the 10th and 11th, or the 9th and the 10th, I can't remember. That's it for our show, and that's it for the week. Thanks for listening to it. Thanks for your help and for your support. Folks, please support the programme. It's been a long time since I made a request for donations, but I feel I have to do it every now and then. Go to richieallen.co.uk. There are PayPal details there and a bank account detail or bank account details there. If you can, only if you can. If you can't, ignore me. But if you can, please support us. It's really important that you do, because the only source of funding for the programme is you. There is no advertising anymore, sadly. And that's the way it's got to be in the independent media. Going to leave you with some Brian Ferry. Wish you a very happy weekend. Look after yourselves and one another. And join me on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. UK time for Sunday View. I'll see you for Sunday View, right? Have a great weekend. Look after yourselves. Bye now.